Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Fairmount Housing. This is the May 19th, 2022 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is being provided in a hybrid manner, allowing members of the public to participate both in person and telephonically. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the participants to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers. This meeting is being held in person with additional telephonic access being provided to the public. Today's agenda and related documents and information are available on the RI Housing website. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Vice Chairman James Thorson will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak, please state your name prior to speaking. And with that, Mr. Vice Chairman, I turn it back to you to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. I'm Jim Thorson, and it's great to see smiling faces again and be back in this room. Welcome to the board meeting. I'm sorry I was a few minutes late. I'd like to call the meeting to order, and the current time I have is 9:45. What I'd like to do is ask Carol to conduct a roll call of the attendance of the board and housing staff.
Commissioner James Thorson.
Here.
Commissioner Liz Tanner.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Byrne.
Present.
Commissioner Kevin Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Stephen McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Maria Barry.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Carol. Jim Thorson again. I just wanted to introduce board action number one, which is the approval of minutes of the board meeting held on April 21st, 2022. I'd like to have a motion to approve, and please remember to state your name.
Ms. Tanner, make a motion to approve.
Do we have a second?
Ms. Tanner, second.
Thank you, Liz. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'd like Corinne to call the roll. Oh, excuse me. Can we do a voice vote on this? Yes, please. Okay.
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting held on April 21st, 2022, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
I get it.
Because I wasn't there.
Myself as well, Stephen.
All right. The motion is approved by a majority vote with 2 abstaining. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. And so I'm going to make a few remarks and then turn it over to Carol. It's Jim Thorson again. I wanted to, as I mentioned at the top, welcome everyone here and back into the boardroom. I think we're excited as we head into this summer. There's a lot of housing activity going on around the state, and to be able to coordinate that is going to be a challenge. I remarked to staff, and I'll say here publicly, that there's never been a better time to be in government than right now. We have many problems to solve, but we have some means to be able to do that. Being able to do that and prioritize effectively is part of why we're here. So I wanted to thank you for your interest and thank the board for the commissioners for their continuing interest in doing that. I think if we pull together, we can solve a lot of problems, and that's why most of us got into this in the first place. So. Thank you, and for your attention. And I want to thank the people here from the public who are interested. We count on and listen to what you have to offer to help us complete our tasks. And with that, what I'd like to do is to turn it over to Carol.
Thank you, Director. So our home ownership numbers aren't where they were, obviously, you know, compared with last year. But we are holding our own, and we have closed 465 loans through April 30th. I also wanted to share that we've received over 1,000 pre-approval applications for our first-gen down payment program. 277 of these applications have been approved and 72 are in process. We closed on four first-gen grants with another 9 in the pipeline. We continue to expand our collaboration with the Rhode Island Association of Realtors. In April, DBR approved a new continuing education class that focuses on Rhode Island housing's impact on expanding homeownership in Rhode Island and our lending products, and this will be the third course that we deliver to the association. We've provided you with a chart on our delinquency stats year over year. While delinquency still remains high, overall delinquency is down almost 2%, and our seriously delinquent loans are 4% lower than 2021. We've also provided an update on the Homeowner Assistance Fund. To date, 162 applications have been approved, with funding of over $4 million being provided to Rhode Island homeowners. Our development group has been working through, I believe, 52 applications for funding under the consolidated RFP, which is providing approximately $60 million in federal, state, and agency financing for production and preservation. There were a number of programs that were available under this round, and over the next couple of months we'll be before you with funding recommendations for the programs for which we have oversight, and then to the HRC for their approval of BHRI funding. The funding request totaled over $217 million. As you know, in collaboration with the governor and his team, we've made the decision to close the rent relief program effective June 1st. All of the applications in process through that date will be reviewed for eligibility. We and our program partners have been heavily messaging that the program is closing. You've probably seen it on Facebook or on Twitter. Certainly Chris can update you on numbers if you have questions. I hope that you've had the opportunity to see our 2021 annual report and all of the great work that's being done by our partners. Even in the midst of a pandemic, we've managed to do a good deal of production and preservation and making loans for first-time homebuyers. It's been a terrific year. We are just starting the planning to celebrate our 50th year, just next year, and so we're going to conduct a number of events, and Chris and her team are working on how we message throughout this year. Yes. One item that didn't make it into the report this month is that we've again been named one of the best places to work in Rhode Island by our team members, so that's terrific news for us. And we've outlined a few upcoming events, Arctic Mill and West and combined groundbreaking and ribbon cutting at Brookside Terrace in East Greenwich. And we have successfully executed a new issuance for the HOB program, selling over $100 million in tax-exempt and taxable bonds. So this will help us to assist a number of home buyers. And the issuance was again designated as social bonds. So let me pause there and open it up for questions.
Yes.
This is Leanne. I have a couple of questions. One on the Home Ownership Assistance Fund.
Mm-hmm.
The chart you included in your report has a ratio where the denials are much higher than the approvals so far, and I wondered if you or someone from the team could speak to what the reasons for the denials are and if there's any way to address, you know, barriers for folks to apply to that program.
So let me direct it to Peter Pagonis.
Happy to answer that. So the majority of the denials, and we do have on our dashboard the reasons for the denials and the associated percentages, but primarily over income. So we have a mandate from Treasury that we cannot go over 150% of the area median income. And while we have published that and informed the public of that, we still have obligations that.
To clarify, and because I'm me, I have one question on rent relief. So the data portal shows that the approvals are at like 188 million, and I know we have 352 in allocation to the state. Do you have an estimate of how long it'll take to go through the rest of the pending applications and get kind of the balance on the street?
So we think that once the portal closes on June 1st, it'll take us 60 to 90 days to make our way through all of it. It's slower than at our top speed, but we have seen an uptick in low-quality applications, and so we have taken some steps to more fully investigate and explore the documentation that we're getting.
And is it going to be based on when folks applied, how those are taken in order, or there's also a prioritization?
There's a prioritization. So evictions, utility shutoffs go to the top of the list, and then the software itself takes into consideration how long you've been unemployed and income and things like that and puts them in an order. So anybody who's facing, again, eviction or utility shutoff gets done first to keep them in their home.
Thank you.
All set.
Kevin Orth, I have a question to Jim. Just to be further nicely, I believe. I saw an article some time ago, just a week ago, about commercial lenders' mortgage delinquency rates in Rhode Island. And I believe it said it was 1.8% for the 90-day plus delinquent. And we're showing, I believe it's 5.8%. Could you explain if that's an apples-to-apples comparison first, I guess, and then secondly, why there might be that divergence in those rates?
You had said commercial, right? Do you mean residential?
Well, I'm assuming it's commercial lenders who are active in the state of Rhode Island when providing mortgages. 1.4% it says in February for the 90-plus day.
So we compare our delinquency to the MBA data. I'm not sure if that's the data.
Core logic.
Core logic, yeah. That's probably all loans, which includes jumbo loans, which includes conventional loans. Obviously, our loans are for low and moderate income first term home buyers, so they do not perform at the same level historically, not just in a pandemic, but historically they do not perform at the same level as the entire commercial servicers. So when we look at the performance of our portfolio, we look particularly at the FHA category. MBA breaks it to all loans, conventional, FHA, VA. So we are performing pretty much in line in the 90 plus day category. We're slightly higher, but we're performing pretty much in line with the FHA loans. Now that 90 day category does hold all of those borrowers who are still protected under COVID forbearance. And that is a slow transition out of the COVID forbearance into what we call an exit or work mitigation exit. And we are closely monitoring that. So they can exit with a variety of solutions. One would be, one of the work mitigation options that were offered by the federal government under COVID. And the other one is the HAP program. So right now, 27% of all of the applications in the HAP program are Rhode Island housing borrowers. We have been aggressively promoting the HAP program to our borrowers, and we are seeing success with that. So, yes, we are higher, but we are in line with FHA. And then secondly, we are slowly seeing those borrowers transition out of that COVID forbearance into some type of sustainable mortgage payment post-COVID.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions? I have a question, but does anybody else have questions? Carol, you didn't talk about the bond issue. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I will actually defer to Kara to talk about the bond issue.
Okay.
Sure. So I would say the bond market is not what it was previously. So we used to be able to come and say we've been oversubscribed 2-3 times oversubscribed, meaning if we are selling $100 million of bonds, we have $300 million of orders. That was not the case this time. The bankers remind us that we enjoyed several years of a very good bond market, and we were able to sell all of our bonds, just not, at the same rates that we were previously. So it was a successful bond issue, but rates are creeping up.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? In that case, it's Jim Thorson again. I'd like to introduce committee action number 4, which is approval of our external charitable donations and contributions. And James Comer, our deputy executive director, will present on Committee Action Number 4.
Thank you, Director Thorson. This month we have two items for approval, and they're, in addition to being good events, they're also very exciting because they highlight the great work of two of our staff members. So the first is the Providence Business News 2022 Business Women's Award Luncheon on May 25th. That's, we're sending some staff for $330, and that is because the CFO of the year is sitting here in the room with you. Cara LaChapelle has won the award as CFO of the year from Providence Business News Women's Awards Luncheon, so congratulations, Cara. And the second event, it's an event we've supported over the years, it's a great event, the Housing Network of Rhode Island's 30th Anniversary Annual Meeting on June 13th. We are sending a large contingent of staff to that for $770 because the Friend of the Network Award this year is being awarded to Christine Hunsinger for her great work. Those are the two events we're supporting this year for a total of $1,100.
Thank you, James. It's Jim Thorson again. What I'd like to do at this time is request a motion to approve Committee Action Number 4. And please remember to state your name.
Maria Berry, so
moved by Maria. Do I have
Kevin or second?
Kevin, thank you. And I'm just checking to make sure we can do a voice vote. Yes?
Yes, Vice Chairman, we can do voice votes today if that's...
Okay, Corinne, would you please conduct the voice vote?
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of the approval of external charitable donations and contributions as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson here again to introduce Board Action Number 5, which is preliminary approval financing for Burnin Mills in Woonsocket. And Ann Berman, our Director of Real Estate Development, will present on Board Action Number 5.
Thank you, Chairman. This request for action is for preliminary approval of a tax-exempt loan in the amount of $11,560,000 from Burnin Mills, of which $2,160,000 will remain as a permanent first mortgage. The developer is Brissa Venture LLC, which is sort of a joint venture between Brissa Development and Alliance Capital, or the development arm of Alliance Capital. Burnin Mills is located in Woonsocket, and this is a proposed 60-unit development. This project has a bit of a history. Several developers have started redevelopment and got caught actually in the last recession in 2006, that period of time. So it's basically partially developed and mostly undeveloped. Let's see, what else? The 60 units will be a mix of efficiency one and two bedroom units. The developer has applied for project-based vouchers from the City of Woonsocket, and they will receive 5811 vouchers from Rhode Island Housing. This is an expensive project. However, the total development cost, once you back out the reserves, is consistent with the QAP cap of $390,000 per unit. This project did previously receive $4 million in BHRI. And they did apply under the most recent consolidated funding round that Carol just mentioned for the balance of their funding. The syndicator is Alliance Capital. They're paying 94 cents. So we are recommending preliminary approval of the loan.
Thank you, Anne. Do I have a, it's Jim Thorson. Do I have a motion to approve Board Action Number 5? And please remember to state your name.
Kevin Horwitz, so moved.
Moved by Kevin. Do I have a second?
Liz Tanner, second.
Liz Tanner, second. Let's have any discussion or questions. I have a couple of questions. We failed the one of the underwriting tests because it's a tax exempt transaction, and I don't know whether Ann wants to take this one or Kevin in the credit committee.
Sure, if you want to.
We have two bridge loan tests, and under the tax-exempt loan program, we need to loan a certain amount in order to qualify for all of the credits. which is sort of an upside down calculation. And as Kevin and we talked about at the credit committee, it seems to be no project passes that test. As kind of a mitigate against that, we do require a recourse guarantee for the construction loan. We do require a minimum of 15% of the equity at closing, and based on some feedback we got from the credit committee, we are exploring what the impact is on sort of overall pricing of the transaction if we basically require more syndication at closing or during construction than is typically or that is currently proposed in the syndicator's letter of intent. So we will explore that. Initial response was a reduction in equity, so we'll kind of have to sort of work through the process and see where that ends up.
Okay.
I would just add to that. I think Dan is right. I mean, you have to meet the 50% test. So in deals like this where you have a very the economic support, a relatively low permanent loan, but you still need to hit 50% of the total project cost essentially with your tax-exempt loan, so you have a very large tax-exempt loan shrinking down. So there's a big risk if we're providing that construction loan or equity bridge, there's a big risk to us of repayment of that at the end of the day. So I think it gives me some comfort knowing that Alliant is a JV with the developer, assuming we underwrite, make sure it's the proper entity that's in there, that's got the deep pockets to make sure that we're paid back. And I do appreciate you looking at the pay-in schedule. Again, more equity in the deal, more skin in the deal gives us a little bit more comfort that they're gonna come through. And I understand that the equity price goes down, but the amount of interest rates, expense goes down as well if we're not having to fund it. So
okay, and it appears that of the 60 units, close to the majority of them have rents, gross rents of less than $1,000 a month. Is that about right?
Fairly common, yes.
Okay, all right. Does anyone else have any questions?
I have a quick one. This is Leanne. Just based on that last question, does the developer have any plans to do connection to services for the folks that are at the connection to services for the folks that are at the very low income spectrum that they're proposing? I know I saw some 20% AMI.
Yeah. So under the 811 program that comes with services, beyond that, I don't know, but we can certainly find out.
Thank you.
No questions from you guys. For Bank of America.
Thank you. For the record, that was Maria Barron speaking.
So we, this is Jim Thorson. We have a motion. We've had some discussion. Are there any more questions before we call the voice vote? Corinne, will you please help us?
Certainly. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of providing preliminary approval of financing for Vernon Mills in Woonsocket, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by 5 affirmative votes with 1 recusing. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again to introduce board action number 6, which is firm approval of financing for 315 Park Avenue in Cranston. And once again, we have Ann Berman, who will present board action number 6. Ann?
Thank you, Chairman. This transaction and the next one are similar and utilize the Federal Financing Bank ReShare Initiative Program. And as a reminder, the FFB is a branch of the Treasury. They provide a direct loan to Rhode Island Housing at rates that are lower than what we can achieve in the bond market. And we, in turn, loan that money to our borrowers. Both of these transactions are a refinance of projects in our portfolio. Each results in an equity takeout. And we work closely with our finance group, and they have determined that the interest earnings on the new loans represent the best approach financially for Rhode Island Housing as we look forward to the next 15 years for these projects. So with that, this first request is for firm approval of a taxable loan.
Are you working?
To exceed $10,100,000.
So the VA is actually available to meet tomorrow with VS USA.
Developer is Providence Realty Investments. There are 63 units, all of which are supported by a HAP contract that was recently renewed for 20 years. The borrower is undertaking a small amount of rehab. They are, however, putting a substantial amount as a deposit into the replacement reserve. The loan requested today is the maximum amount loan based on the interest rates that are now several weeks old. So we expect that given that the interest rates have risen recently, that the loan may actually come in at less than $10 million won. But that's what we're seeking approval for today. If you have any questions.
This is Jim Thorson. Do we have any questions? Well, actually, I want to hear from Kevin.
Sure. I'm glad to see the FFB program kind of back to life here and that we're utilizing it, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of it. It makes us much more competitive in the marketplace and provides some good long-term financing for these projects. This one, as Ann mentioned, does not have much rehab going into it, although the property has been inspected and the condition is deemed to be in good shape. And also, I believe that there's a requirement to have another capital needs assessment done in year 10,
mm-hmm.
and then any replacement reserves deposits adjusted accordingly based on the findings of that report. I'd also note that I believe it's 1.5 points of the new loan amount will be contributed by the borrower to go into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund.
Thank you, Kevin. So I'll take a motion, and then we'll have discussion. Can I have a motion, please?
Second, Marie Berry.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion, comments, questions, or concerns? Based on the documentation, I'm satisfied, and your comments, I'm satisfied. Corinne, will you please conduct a voice vote and report the results?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for 315 Park Avenue in Cranston, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. And Jim Thorson again. I want to introduce board action number 7, which is firm approval of financing for Metcalf Courts 2 apartments here in Providence. And Ann, we're going to call on you again to walk us through Metcalf Courts.
Thank you, Chairman. Just like the previous transaction, this is a refinance of an existing transaction in our portfolio. This is slightly different. We're asking for permanent financing in the amount of $20,600,000, which will be funded through the Federal Financing Bank, and a capital magnet fund loan of $100,000. Providence Realty Investments is the developer, 148 units, same large deposit to the replacement reserve at the onset, and a revisiting that in 10 years. If anybody has any questions?
I have one question because this was in the last write-up as well. Is a higher vacancy rate than was forecast in the appraiser's valuation? And are there any vacant apartments anywhere?
It's a great question. Well, so both of these projects enjoy a HAP contract, which supports 100% of the units. And they're well-maintained developments, so historically, and we go back 10 years to look at this, the vacancy rate is well under 2 and could, in fact, be under 1 at this point. Our standard underwriting is 5%. The appraiser looks at this and says 2.5%, so we're underwriting at 4%, which we think is a huge cushion, but is a prudent.
Thank you, Ann. It's Jim Thorson. Kevin, do we have any comment from the credit folks on this?
We just had this one's very similar to the last deal. Same borrower, long-term owner, good track record with us. The only, I think, other interesting piece here is the $100,000 capital magnet fund going into this transaction. We talked about that a little bit, and the reason, correct me if I'm wrong, Ann, but is that we have to meet certain requirements of investing in distressed areas, and this transaction happens to meet those requirements. It's a small loan amount, just the amount needed so that we can satisfy the capital market fund requirements. The loan will be paid back. I think it's at 5% interest. So, but this will enable us to utilize much larger loans on other transactions. So we thought that was a prudent use of the money and of the program, and we recommend approval.
Thank you, Kevin. It's Jim Thorson. What I'd like to do this time is request a motion to approve board action number 7. Please state your name.
Liz Townsend.
Liz, moved.
Second.
Layberry. Second.
Thank you. Any discussion, comments, or questions? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Corinne to conduct a voice vote on the motion.
Certainly. This is Roy Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for Metcalf Court 2 apartments located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again, and with that, I'd like to introduce board action number 8, which is approval of Bridging the Digital Divide Program funding awards, which once again, James Comer, our Deputy Executive Director, will present.
Thank you, Director Thorson. This is James Comer. This request is for an approval of grant funding under the FY 2022 Bridging the Digital Divide Program. This is the second year that we've had this program. The program provides funding for organizations to provide or expand free or low-cost internet access to Rhode Islanders. We issued the RFP for this in December and received 10 proposals, and we're recommending 9 of those proposals be funded for a total of $450,000. And I'll briefly just go through each of the proposals. The first is from AS220, an arts nonprofit located here in downtown Providence, to receive $39,480 to update their internet technology and provide 1 year of free internet for their residents, who are largely artists and creative workers. 39 of their 47 units are designated as affordable. Next is for the Cannon Group, a property management company, to receive $29,959.21. Very specific, to provide devices and internet to community rooms and digital literacy training at 4 elderly developments, Fox Point Manor in Providence, Conanchet Cliffs 1 and 2, and Conanchet Hills, which are all in Hopkinton. Third is for Church Community Housing, Community Development Corporation serving Newport County, to receive $18,469 to provide 44 Wi-Fi hotspots and 3 years of unlimited internet service at 44 properties, including 33 scattered sites and 11 multifamily developments. Fourth is Central Falls Housing Authority, to receive $75,000 to assist their public housing residents, housing choice voucher recipients, and other members of the Central Falls community in accessing discounted internet plans that they are eligible for. The fifth is for Crossroads Rhode Island, to receive $61,940,000 for the parts, labor, and installation of technology for in-unit internet at the Summer Street 1 and 2 developments. Sixth is for 50 Square LP, which is sponsored by Church Community Housing, to receive $20,000 for the installation of access points for free wireless internet at 50 Washington Square, which is low-income housing tax credit development in Newport. Seventh is Macaulay Ministries, again with a specific ask for $56,765.79 to provide internet access in each unit and common areas in each unit with a computer, monitor, and printer. The grant will support residents living in Macaulay Village, which is a transitional housing program for homeless families led by women experiencing or having experienced domestic and or sexual violence. The eighth is for POA, a nonprofit housing developer, to receive $75,000 for startup costs towards providing free internet to all units at Oxford Place and Gardens. And finally, the Providence Housing Authority, to receive $73,386 to provide internet to community rooms at 7 of their developments and provide 107 residents of high-rise developments or that are part of their workforce development and training program with devices, internet access, and digital literacy training. Happy to entertain any questions about these.
This is Leanne. I have to recuse myself from this discussion and vote due to a conflict of interest.
Steve?
Hi, thank you. Steve McAllister. So what was the eligibility to apply for this? Said you got 10. Was every community, every area of the state?
Yes, it was open to statewide participation, absolutely.
And 9 out of 10 that applied or being proposed here, What was the 10th one, not the company itself, but how come they won?
Sure. It was not as consistent with the program guidelines as some of the other proposals in our ranking. The short answer, we had a limited amount of funding.
Sure. And this is the second year?
This is the second year, yes.
Great. Thank
you. So, go ahead, Liz. I'm sorry.
What kind of evidence of completion do we receive to make sure that that's your question?
Part of it, yes.
To assure that dollars are expended.
Sure. We receive quarterly reports from each grantee. So we have, if you'd like, I have some from the last grantees. We can, I'll give you that information if you'd like. But we require a quarterly report prior to dispersing funds, so that we're sure that they're conducting the activities that they're supposed to, and that we're seeing the outcomes that were anticipated.
And staff often go out on site to review what's happening.
So my question, James, was that it looks like a number of these provide pre-service for a limited time, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. What happens after the money's gone and to continue the service? Are the residents expected to pick up the cost, or are they going to reapply for a grant application?
The short answer is it depends. There are, you know, we often ask grantees to provide evidence of sustainability as part of the application, and some have done that, certainly in terms of other investments that they're seeking. There are also opportunities coming up both on the state and federal for expansion of low or no cost internet service provision to affordable housing residents, and so those are also on the horizon. The state can access some funds. I believe they're in the process of applying for those now, and as we've heard from the president, there will be an increased emphasis on what is called the Affordable Connectivity Program, which provides high-speed internet at $30 with a subsidy of $30 that offsets, so it's essentially free to qualified residents. So there will be opportunities to sustain this. It's a jumping-off point for us.
Thank you, James. Any other questions?
I had a similar question to that one. That was really helpful, and I think this is terrific. So one other thought I had is, are there some best practices that you'll be able to take out of this to sort of share? It does seem like everyone's kind of got their own program.
Well, it's an interesting thing in that when we started this last year, that was part of the impetus, is to, we're not internet service providers, we're not experts in that field, to kind of put it out to our partners and say, what do you need and what would be a good use of the funds? So this has absolutely been a learning experience. And, Stacey Wasserman, who's our senior program manager who administers this program, is in constant contact with the folks at the state level and folks in the internet service provision community to see kind of where all of this is heading and use some of the information we have from our successful grants to inform some of that work as well.
That's great, because it seems like these discounted programs are, not everyone knows how to sign up for them, what I'm hearing.
That's very much the case, yeah. And, like any other federal program, there are challenges and obstacles for folks, and folks, particularly in low-income communities or folks for whom, English is not their first language, things of that nature. That's part of what the Central Falls Housing Authority is doing to connect their resident population and other folks in the Central Falls community to these available benefits, because it's not always the most transparent thing to do, or people might not even be aware of those type of programs.
Right. That would be great if we could learn from that and then figure out how to get everybody connected to them. That's great.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Maria. Jim, I'd like to request a motion on board action number 8, and please remember to state your name.
Move favorable action.
Second,
Maria Barry.
Thank you, Maria. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Corinne to please conduct a voice vote on this motion.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of providing approval for bridging the digital divide program funding awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. I note that Commissioner Billy B. Byrne has recused. The motion passes with 5 affirmative votes.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson here again. There being no further business before this board, I'd like to request a motion to adjourn.
Director, if I may.
Yes.
I just want to let the commissioners know that June will be a very heavy agenda. There are a number of credit actions coming before you, and other actions related to the agency, also convening a meeting of the trustees of the Affordable Housing Trust in June. So please be prepared for and be patient with us as we put together this agenda.
What's the date on that again, please?
June 16th.
June 16th. Lock out extra
time, yeah.
Yeah. We can certainly do that.
Okay, great. With that, Jim Thorson again. Please, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion by Steve McAllister, second by
Liz Tanner.
Corinne, will you conduct the voice vote, please?
Certainly. Commissioner, all those in favor of adjournment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson, this meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners is adjourned. Thank you.